Hello, my name is Marie Bilodeau, and you are listening to On the Edge. Today, we're pleased to welcome author Phoebe Ray and her latest novel, Gemma 7729. Welcome, Phoebe.
Thank you.
How are you today?
Terrific. It's a gorgeous day in Massachusetts.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. So, where did you get the inspiration for Gemma 7729?
Well, I actually wrote that novel, you know, how long it takes to get a novel between covers, really started as a short story about the year 2000, 2001, and I think it actually came from my daydreaming one day about how, what if there were a government so repressive that it took all sorts of just ordinary misdemeanors like driving drunk or forged check and lumped them all together along with murder and rape and called it inappropriate behavior. That was what I was daydreaming about, and that was the original name of the short story and the novel, and then we changed it to Gemma 7729. So that's what it came out of.
Interesting. So then it came out of the inspiration of what the future could be. And in that future, you have some very interesting concept, such as altars. Can you tell us a little bit about altars and the idea, where you got that idea?
Well, the altars are sort of, it's like a chemical lobotomy. It's just rather than killing people or incarcerating them, you simply mess with their brain and they become very docile and presumably even possibly happy. They have no worries. There are no bumps in their lives. So they're rather placid and manageable people. That's what an altar is.
And this mostly happens to the women in your book.
Yes. Well, my sort of conceit is that it was women who, in the late 21st century, got so upset about the oppression of the government that they took to the streets. So essentially, they got blamed for the chaos that happened. It really was a kind of civil war. But women started it. And so once the government is in control, they're on the bad end. they get repressed. It's not supposed to happen again. So, and the only way you can do that is just to sit on people.
And another theme that you touch upon in your future to be, or your vision of the future, is that cities kind of become like a big melting pot and a playground for authority all at once. Now, is this something that you personally see happen, that you personally predict if things continue the way they are?
Well, I don't know. I think the sort of zeal of my own government that repressing people, we all are feeling that. You know, I'm not the only one. There are millions of us who feel that we never called America the homeland. Where did that come from? It's ridiculous, you know? And I think after the events of 9/11, there was just a wrong reaction to trying to stop that from ever happening again, you know? So it's not a prediction, but there's a certain amount of repression going on in the world, and it could happen here, and it could get worse.
Well, it certainly made for an interesting read. Now, tell us a little bit about Gemma. She's such an interesting character. Where did you get the inspiration for her?
Oh, I have no idea. I actually, Marie, I had that idea for the novel, and I kept trying to write it, and I write in the morning. I'm a rather disciplined writer, and I get up in the morning very early. I'm an early riser. And I started the novel, or the short story, as it happened, three times. I could not get anywhere. I would get maybe two paragraphs. I'd get a page and a half. I'd sit here and stare at the computer and say, that's not it. And there was the morning I got up and I thought about this was over a period of months. I would forget about it and I'd go back to it. And there was the morning that I got up and I pulled up a blank document. I stared at it. And I put inappropriate behavior at the top, which was my original title. and stared at it. And the only way I can put this, and it sounds kind of corny, is Gemma walked into the room.
Ah.
And I wrote, I survived my first encounter with state security of the administrative government of North America, period. And that's still the first sentence in the book. It was just Gemma came into the, and I, well, you know, looking back on it now, I can say what happened was that I wasn't able to write it because I didn't have a character in my head.
Mm.
You know, I was writing a thesis, I was going to write an essay, not a novel or a short story that had some human event in it. And Gemma walked into the room and she just came over and stood behind my chair and I started writing. And of course, it's a first person narrative, not my favorite way of working. I don't always like first person novels, but there was no getting away from her. She was a very spiky character to carry around in my head for so long.
She wanted to have her way.
She did. Well, yeah, you can tell that from the character in the book. She gets her way most of the time.
Yes. So you were talking a little bit about Gemma, and maybe we can just pick up from there. And
okay. You know, I don't know. You get a character in my head. She was very real to me when I was writing her, and amusing even. You know, and I found her an interesting person to hang out with, I guess. And I don't know if there were a real Gemma that we would be best friends. I think probably not. It's about her that or not that I wouldn't do. You know. It's interesting to me that several of the reviewers have suggested that this is a good book for young adults. And I found that a little surprising because of, I mean, there's not any particularly teeny sex in the book. She sleeps with three guys, I think, and falls in love with one. But she blows up buildings, you know? But apparently violence is okay as long as the sex isn't steamy. It's just a role model, I think. You know, she's not a bad role model for kids, actually, because she's finally a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And not a bad person, you know.
No, that's very true. And one of the main drives for Gemma in the book is a history, which you've already mentioned, the wars at the end of the 21st century. Now, is history something you're personally inspired by? It was just such a drive for Gemma that we can't help but get the feeling that for you, history would be something important as well as the author.
Well, I don't know. I'm a history buff. I read history for pleasure all the time, and I'm political. I'm very involved with our current political situation here. So I think about that. I think about history a lot and how it works and doesn't work and how it is manipulated, both in hindsight and what's coming next. So I suppose that's really part of why there are historical events in the book.
Yeah, it's a very strong theme that keeps it all coherent together. And another thing that was kind of interesting is you have this strong ties to the history of the world, while at the same time you're striving for a better future that kind of reflects what happened before some of those historical events. We get the feeling that you want Gemma and the readers to cross that threshold into the future while remembering the past, kind of like, you know, the typical river running through the valley idea, always constant. Do you feel that she had managed to cross the threshold she needed to move the world forward?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I think the book is, it's a dystopia, to be sure, but it also is a hopeful book. She never gives up. And you get the feeling that her associates are not going to give up either, and that things are changing slightly. Her situation, the political climate in the country is changing slightly. New things are happening, good things.
It certainly is. Now, I'm going to give kind of a spoiler alert to our listeners here, but I'm curious, Phoebe, did you have a hard time with your ending? Did you toy with the idea of, you kind of let her live in a way, but in another way you really didn't? Did you toy with the idea of letting her live, of taking the easy way out?
Nope.
That's admirable, because it may feel very striking.
I don't think it ever crossed my mind. The way her history unfolds, it just seemed to me the ending was inevitable.
So did you already know that you were heading there?
Not always. I don't work from outlines. I think I didn't know how the book was going to end. But I wasn't surprised. And when I got nearer to it, I saw where it was going and endorsed that. I thought, yeah, this is the way it's got to go. Mm. So, it made me sad too, you know? I mean, she does and she doesn't. And
it was lovely in a way, too, because you kind of brought that feeling that she was now part of history. So it was very, it was mm-hmm. well wrapped together. Now, are you working on anything else in the world of Gemma?
Not really. I don't. It depends on, of course, the reception of Gemma 7729, whether anything more comes out of this world. If it's a honking big hit and there's a huge demand for a sequel, I suppose that could happen. I wouldn't want to write a book that's just a repeat of Gemma and what she did. So, but I have four novels sitting on my desktop.
Oh, really? Can you tell us a bit about them?
Well, there's one that it's actually a trilogy series that's set in... I don't know what we're going to call this, magic realism, maybe. It's very, I don't write high fantasy at all. I'm not into dragons and wizards and stuff. But this is set late Bronze Age in a country that never was, but probably is an amalgamation of the Altai Mountains on the China border and Bulgaria for some reason. And it's really about It's a utopia. It's about a utopian society of tribes and what happens when they, for the first time in their history in 20 generations, are attacked by an outlaw band and their village is practically destroyed and the leaders are killed. It's hereditary leadership and a young woman becomes the leader of the tribe and she's wacky. She's as spiky as Gemma is, but very, very different. But this idea came because I did a lot of environmental work in the 70s and into the 80s. And one of the things that I did as a conservationist working on endangered species and other environmental problems, and I had the opportunity to meet with several Native American groups to work on their issues, environmental issues, and I was intrigued by the way that in the history of their tribes, how quickly they adapted technology when it happened, you know, when they were first touched. And in particular, the Macaw tribe in Washington State were whalers, and they used bone harpoon tips. Then they met Yankee whalers, and the next whaling season, they were using iron tips.
Mm.
And that intrigued me about how technology touches people, isolated people, or people whom we would say are less technologically advanced, and that's really what's at the backbone of the series of this. Of what happens to this tribe of people who are really kind of fun? They're nice, pleasant folks with a very, very strict kind of laws of their tribe. Keep themselves isolated, but what happens when the outside world intrudes upon them and they begin to adapt and use new technologies? And it's just their adventures, how they grow up as a tribe. They're called the Winter People, and they live in very, very high in the mountains, and they did that on purpose because most of the time nobody can get to them even. So, And my character in that, the young woman in that, grows up over the series of novels and learns how to actually govern her tribe. I guess it has a little bit of a kind of politics again. Must be in my head, I guess.
It's of interest. So that's just one of four that you're working on, eh?
Yes. Well, there are three novels in that, and I also wrote a thriller.
Oh.
And that's really in a good draft. I haven't actually finished that, but it's not genre fiction. It's a straight-on thriller about a stalker. And I don't know why I did that, but I don't worry about stalking or think about it at all, but I wrote a book about a stalker. So,
interesting.
I really am focused on promoting Gemma 7729, you know, and I hope it does well this summer. I'll be going to a whole bunch of conventions and doing some book signings. And in fact, one of the fun things is that in June, my local wine store, where I have been buying my favorite wines for the past 20-some years, they knew everybody in town. It's a very small town. They all know about the book coming out. And well, we don't have a bookstore in town anymore since a man who ran our bookstore died and the place just closed down. So
oh, no.
My wine seller, when I said the book's coming out, I'm going to have books in a couple of weeks, she said, we have to have a wine tasting book signing.
That's so great.
That's what we're doing. On June 6th, we're going to have a wine tasting book signing. So I'm going to read, there are two scenes in the novel where Gemma drinks wine. So I figured I'd read those two scenes and... which is really kind of silly, but...
I think that's great. Well, thank you very much for being with us today, Phoebe. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I was having fun, too. It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, well, our pleasure, and I can't wait to read your next book, say. Well, you'll have to keep us up to date.
Oh, I shall try.
Best of luck with your promotion.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.